Welcome to Sketchbook Podcast, a discussion about inspiration and process with artists, creators, and designers. I'm your host, Daniel Montoya Jr. The year 1987. The month, December, the day, the 22nd. George Michael's Faith, Debbie Gibson's Shake Your Love, Michael Jackson's The Way You Make Me Feel were popular songs in the United States. Three Men and a Baby, Throw Mama from the Train, and Eddie Murphy Raw were popular movies. Who's the Boss, Growing Pains, Moonlighting were ratings giants on TV. And Ralph Fiennes, Jean-Michel Basquiat, and Ted Cruz, and Eric Paul Cosman all share the same day as the anniversary of their birth. If you're like me, you know Eric Cosman from his unfiltered Facebook posts about pageantry, Chicago sports, and Lagos marching band names, words and syllables. But Eric is also a highly sought-after designer, consultant, and educator in the marching arts. He has worked with many of the top ensembles in DCI, WGI, and BOA, including the Blue Coach Drum and Bugle Corps, the Woodlands High School Marching Band, and the Avon High School Indoor Drumline. Eric is currently the head of audio for the Boston Crusaders and previously was the electronics caption head at the Blue Coats, where he played an integral role in propelling their electronics program to the top of the activity. For the past 3 years, Eric has served as a consultant and audio engineer for Flow Marching. In addition to the marching arts, Eric has designed and installed audio, video, and lighting systems for many high school auditoriums, churches, and restaurants throughout the Southeast. He most recently worked as the technical coordinator for the Bailey Performance Center at Kennesaw State University in Kennesaw, Georgia. Originally from Park Ridge, Illinois, a wonderful place, Eric currently resides in Leander, Texas, just outside of Austin, with his wife Erin and their two huskies, Saber and Dakota. Now, Eric Cosman, is my fidelity high?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. Maybe a little hot in my headphones.
Oh, that's turn the music up in my headphones.
I can't hear the snare.
Can't hear the...
Give me the kick.
I think the mics work pretty well, as anyone who just heard you drinking some iced water.
Oh, yeah. I got to pick up all that ice swishing around.
Now, Eric, could you beat Michael Skarn in a game of hockey?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He trained for, like, according to the montage, like a day.
That's pretty good.
And he made the All-Star.
No, I'm actually terrible at hockey, which is why I love playing it.
It's like golfing at Top Golf. Like, those who can't golf go to Top Golf and eat and drink and hit golf balls.
Yeah. Well, it was, I started maybe 2 years ago for real playing. And it was nice to just be a total beginner again and learn. Remember what it's like to learn, and, you know, definitely gives you some more empathy for your students. I think we forget sometimes how hard it is to learn a new skill. And, you know, you see all these incredible band programs and they're great. And then you see these beginners, you're like, come on. But then it's like, oh, this is really hard.
Could you beat Happy Gilmore in a game of hockey?
Oh, no way. He would murder me.
He would murder.
He took a state off and tried to stab a guy. Only guy that ever did that.
So it's a record. As a Midwesterner living in Texas, I want your quick thoughts on Torchies.
I enjoy it. I know it's the hipster's thing to say, like, oh, you can get better. Well, sure, of course. But it's it's good, and it's convenient because it's everywhere. Whatever they're, and as a Midwesterner, they have this kind of ranch-type sauce that goes on one of their tacos. That is just very good.
What about Chewy's?
No. Absolutely not.
Thank you. Taco Cabana?
I've been there like once or twice. It was fine.
Now we're getting the heavy stuff. Whataburger.
It's good. I don't mind it. It's better than In-N-Out for sure.
I agree with that.
But there are some other places that, excuse me, I would put on.
Which we're probably going to get
top.
To. Yes. Mighty Fine? You been to Mighty Fine?
I have. I went to Mighty Fine like a month ago. There's one near our house. I enjoyed it.
You like it better than Whataburger?
I feel like it's kind of apples and oranges. I feel like it's a little more gourmet.
Yes.
Kind of fast food plus.
Now, I would like to take this podcast opportunity to admit something when I ask this next question. You had said at one point that P. Terry's is the best burger in Austin, correct?
Yes.
Do you still feel that way?
in the fast food realm,
like in the like Hop Dottie, you know, not that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I disagreed with you.
But okay.
Then I recently started going back and getting it. And if you ask for the fries crispy because soggy fries suck.
Correct.
I will go on record as agreeing that P. Terry's might be the best burger.
It's pretty good.
It really is. It's everything people say In-N-Out is, but really isn't. Right. Like P. Terry's is very good.
And not that it really matters, but I feel like the dining experience is better. Whataburger to me is the Waffle House of Texas. In that it's always there for you when you need it the most.
Oh my gosh, that's probably the most accurate description I've ever heard.
I think that's where the attachment comes from. You know, when you're like, oh, I'm so hungry, nothing's open, Whataburger.
And that's not the people from the Southeast, they speak so eloquently and they have so much love for Waffle House. Oh my God, Waffle House and Whataburger.
Yeah, there you go. I will say it's interesting to me that Texans pronounce it Whataburger as in water. But I always just think Whataburger. Like, because wow, Whataburger.
Yeah, I think you're probably more correct. But yeah, Whataburger. Yeah, Whataburger. Yeah. Rudy's Barbecue.
That's the gas station one, right?
Yes. For those listening, Rudy's does sell gas. It's not a gas station that just decided to sell barbecue.
But look, some of the best tacos come from gas stations. So
you are correct. Stripes down in the valley.
Yeah. That was at Laredo Taco Company.
Yes. It's surprisingly very good.
There's one I was just driving back from Houston on Tuesday, and there's one just outside of Austin on 290. A Stripes that has a Laredo Taco Company.
Is it in like Elgin?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All I know is Brenham is when you got to kind of turn.
Yeah. So it's after Brenham, closer to Austin?
Yeah.
It's probably Elgin.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah.
But I was like, ooh, note, future reference.
So Rudy's Barbecue, it's...
I've had it once and it was catered. It was like a band. So
not the same.
So yeah, can't give an official opinion.
Have you done the Salt Lick thing yet?
I have.
The OG Salt Lick or the one in Round Rock?
I went to the one in Round Rock.
I liked the one in Round Rock.
Yeah, it was good. We went there for my brother's birthday.
Happy birthday. Mm-hmm. And Franklin's Barbecue.
I haven't done that yet.
You haven't got up early enough to wait in line for barbecue?
No.
Eat a meal while you're waiting in line for another meal?
No. No, I'm zero fun.
Are you not into the barbecue?
I'm into barbecue. That just seems like a whole lot of effort.
It is.
You know, and it's one of those things where like, I'm not a big see movies in the theater thing. Mm-hmm. So when there's like this huge block, there's like Avatar, like one of those, like, oh mm-hmm. my gosh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And you get all this hype and like, it's a good movie, but like it doesn't live up to the hype. And then it's less of a good movie than it would be if you just saw it. I feel like with the mm-hmm. waiting in line,
yeah.
be like, this is really good. But is it 4 hours? You know, I've had some pretty good barbecue in my life. Is it?
Sure.
You know, is it that much better?
Wow.
Maybe. I don't know. I guess I'll have to do it and find out.
This podcast continues to have the hottest of takes from our guests.
I have just a plethora of hot
you
takes.
You do. I'm ready for some more. Eric, what's the most overrated thing about Austin?
Overrated?
Yeah.
What's highly rated? I don't live in Austin. I live in Leander.
Thank you very much for saying that. But I imagine that as one in the Austin area, you've been here for a few years. People are like, oh, you have to go do this. Try this. You have to see this. And you go and you're like, yeah, okay, that's great.
So when my family first came down, when we moved down here, I was new to the area as well. So I was like, hey, what do we need to do? And I was like, oh, Sixth Street and all this other stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to go bar hopping with my parents. And the other things were the state capitol,
mm-hmm.
the LBJ Museum.
Yeah. The Oasis.
And I mean, that was it. Do you know what we did? This is terrible. We went down to the Riverwalk in San Antonio. Oh. But I mean, it was Christmas time and there was the lights. You know what I mean? It was like, but you know, I think Austin is more of a young person's town as far as like the stuff, you know, like when we live in Atlanta, like there's the World of Coke and the aquarium. There's a lot. And there's mountains for, ooh, we're snoring.
My dog is, he always sleeps underneath we're on a kitchen table doing these and we've got good mics apparently.
Yeah, that's great. There was just a lot more family outings in mm-hmm. Austin. I just feel it's kind of like, I mean, there's great. You can go anywhere and hear live music and all that.
Sure.
Like, that's great. So I don't know if that's overrated.
It's, I don't, it's not a touristy place, right? Sure. So San Antonio, yeah, like, right. And I know that. I grew up here, so we would go to San Antonio to go have dinner or go to the Riverwalk, so I get it. Is there anything underrated in the greater Austin area?
I fly a lot, and what I love about the Austin airport is there are almost no chain food places in the airport.
What? Are there chains right now?
I mean, there's a...
There's Thundercloud Subs, but that's an Austin E thing.
There's what is it?
That Vino place.
There's an Einstein Bagels.
That's correct. An Einstein's a chain, right?
Yeah.
Did it start in Austin?
I have no
idea. I mean, with a name like Einstein, no, probably not.
But it's refreshing. Sometimes, like when I get in at like noon or noon 30, I'll actually eat lunch in the airport because it's like, oh, look at all these great food that I don't normally eat. I think that's a underrated element.
That's a deep dive, a deep cut. Was there in fact anything to do in Midland?
No.
Told you.
I took a nap and then we went to dinner and then I went to bed.
That's like a good adult. Why do people think it's okay to blast music out of a speaker while walking in public?
Because they want attention and they want people to know how cool their music tastes are. I don't know. It's,
I know this is, he's never snored that's this loud.
That's impressive. I'm obviously boring him.
Maul into the puggle.
Deep, deep sleep.
Your voice must lull him.
Yes.
Oh, this is great.
I don't know. It's one thing if you're at like the beach or like, you know, like you're at like a park, like you're playing basketball and you got some music going. That's mm-hmm. okay. But like just walking down the street or in an elevator.
Yeah. What is that?
I don't want to listen.
You know, I don't either.
I got my own things.
Yeah, I think what's worse to me personally is the people who walk around talking on their phones in speakers.
On the speaker?
Yeah, in the airport, like anywhere, like in the doctor's office. It's like, I don't understand why you think this is important.
I like to make it obvious that I'm eavesdropping on their conversation, and usually they switch to
that's awesome.
Regular.
Like, what? And then what happened?
Just kind of like, just give them a look.
Thoughts on sparkling water, specifically Topo Chico?
I don't drink it.
Wow. Now, isn't that something that's on Vince Oliver's rider, sparkling water?
Yeah, but he's just the poostiest. So.
The poostiest. What is your favorite website on the internet, and why is it nextdoor.com?
Oh, it is the greatest. all the people you think don't exist. You know, like you go on Facebook and like you see these comments, and you're like, that's not a real person. No real human being would say that.
Yeah,
they're real and they live right next to you. And you know, you never know when someone's pet peacock is walking down the road and next door, they just let you know. My favorite was attention. This goes hand in hand with your not playing music in a public sphere. Said attention, please know if you sit in your car on the speakerphone, we can all hear you, especially if you're having an affair with your wife and talking to your girlfriend.
What? Yes. Oh my God.
Blew them up.
That's fantastic. But it's also true. You can hear that.
It is. I don't know. It's almost louder outside the car.
Isn't that crazy?
It's weird.
Have to do probably poor audio engineering.
Yeah. Some ASMR.
I actually enjoy ASMR
videos. I can't stand them.
Of course you can.
But I'm like hyper, my wife, it frustrates her. I'm very sensitive to noises, like lip smacking or like loud chewing or mm-hmm. like popping gum, like just like nails on a chalkboard to
I'm
me.
Sorry.
So they're like, it just, it's like, I don't want it.
That was Eric's beard going across the microphone.
Yes.
For the folks listening to us at home in their cars, in their bathtubs, in the subway, walking their dogs, at the gym, or while waiting for results at a marching band contest, please describe in excruciating detail what shoes you're wearing.
I am wearing the Nike Kelso flip-flops, a.k.a. the Universal International Pit Guy sandal. I pretty much buy a pair of these a year. Mm-hmm. They last about a year. They're comfy. They're like $19 at Kohl's. Mm-hmm. Get the job done.
Mm-hmm. It is October 24th in Texas, so you can pretty much wear sandals almost all year round.
It's shorts and hoodie weather right now, which is my absolute favorite.
I love hoodies, but I'm not wearing one right now. Now, Eric, you are a percussionist. You have sure. dabbled in the sticks and mallets world. So before we go on, I would be remiss if I didn't ask the hottest questions of the percussion world. Traditional or match grip?
What instrument?
No one's ever said that. Marching snare drum. Traditional grip on marching snare drum.
I think it's fine if you tilt the drum. I think it's a lot of extra work, but I get it.
Right.
It looks cool.
It does.
Anyone who has an argument besides it looks cool or they want to do drum corps is not a real argument. Those are the only two reasons. Let's just be honest with it. It looks cool.
It looks cool.
And if you want to be in DCI, it's better if, you know.
Unless you can go in a time machine and go back and march that 1 year of Vanguard.
Vanguard right? 05.
Yeah. Finale or Sibelius?
Sibelius.
What do you think about Dorico or Dorico?
I don't really write much anymore, but I would definitely purchase that if I were to start.
I think people say once they figure out the whole audio units, VD, VSL thing.
Then yeah. My biggest thing with Sibelius is they're owned by the evil empire Avid, who I loathe as a company. Not just for what they did to Sibelius, but they're the same company that does Pro Tools. And to do Pro Tools, I make fun of Vince all the time. You have to have, you know, you download the software and it's fine, but in order for it to open, you have to have an iLock, which is just a flash drive.
Right, yeah.
Well, now...
Yeah, Macs don't even have...
So you have to have a dongle for your dongle for a $1,000 program that you purchased.
Right.
Nope.
Wow. Well, that, does that make Vince Oliver like a hipster pootsy kind of thing or what?
No, he's just locked in.
I
locked in. That's what he uses. And I mean, it works great. And when I was working at a university, I used Pro Tools. I went through the training. It's a great program. Mm-hmm. I just hate the company.
It's a whole thing.
Very passionate. Yeah.
Favorite sticks or mallets?
Innovative Percussion.
All the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's no other choice. Favorite cymbals.
Specifically your brand.
Sure.
Zildjian cymbals. I love me some 20-inch Constantinople crash cymbals.
Yeah, those are nice.
Just so good.
Yeah, they really are. Yamaha, Pearl, or
drums, keyboards, concert.
I'll let you.
Okay.
You know, nobody's asked the specifics of that question. Well, I think they always just assume I'm talking about marching drums, but you know, there's more than that. So good. Good for you.
Thank marching you. Drums, Pearl, Pit. Yamaha,
yes.
For sure, if you don't have Rosewood, it's the only option.
Yes.
The
Acoustalons?
Yeah. They sound great. I actually don't mind the Dynasty Rosewood, to be honest with you, or the Bergero or whatever it is
right.
for the marching activity. And then Marimba 1 if it's a concert. But
I would agree. Wow. That's you're a Muppet set player, if you will, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, use the best available.
Thank you. When describing a unison bass drum tam-tam hit, is it goosh or boosh, or do you have another onomatopoeia to describe it?
If it's not high school band, it's a bong hit.
Bong. You're the second person. I think Richard Kern said that also.
Well, bass drum gong. Bong.
Yes. Or Mike Bishop said it. I forgot one of them.
Yeah.
Unreleased episode as of this recording.
I usually say booshes.
Yeah, I like a boosh.
In high school.
Yeah. Are the drums just too loud?
Sometimes. A lot of times it's just an orchestrational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now everyone's getting into field mics. It's a stage. Yeah. It becomes a staging thing too.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're not. A lot of times, honestly, I get more Pit is too loud when I disagree comments than battery is too loud. Maybe it's 'cause I'm a Pit guy, but
word.
There's something to be said for creating a new timbre through doubling and having those two sounds be fairly equal in volume versus the woodwinds louder than the Pit. That I think gets lost on a lot of folks.
Are the electronics just too loud?
Always.
Well, how else are they going to tune the band, right?
Yeah. Again, it depends. My kind of go-to for balancing either like the field liking stuff or like the synth chord is like, it's actually a visual thing. So like, as soon as you can start it soft and kind of crank it up. And then as soon as you start like looking at the speakers, like it's too loud.
Right.
Like as soon as the synthetic sound becomes more noticeable than the sound on the field, you know, for reinforcement stuff. Now a lot of times where, in fact, the electronics can have a melody, and they can, in fact, be the primary musical idea.
Correct.
While the winds are going.
Oh, what?
Very little known fact. That's the stuff that really bothers me, is like, you know, you'll have backfield winds playing whole note chords, mm-hmm. supporting an electronics melody, and it's like, oh, I really can't hear the woodwinds. It's like, well, they're just texture underneath, mm-hmm. there. They're just filling out the sound, filling right. out the melody.
Hmm. You should do a seminar on electronics and judging.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It is. Do colored straps on speaker carts really have an effect on the sound?
No, but putting straps in front of the speakers does. Go through the handle and go on the side. Don't go over the actual speaker element. And in which case, if your straps are not darkly colored, it becomes less obvious. That was the dog, for the record.
For the record, that's my dog. Yes, he's having a very loud morning.
Yeah.
He's very tired for some reason.
I will say that the straps thing bothers me more, the people that call it out to act like they know about electronics more than the actual thing. Because if someone's doing that, 95% of the time, it's just because they don't know any better, because that's what they had, and
right.
they're just trying to keep their stuff from hitting the ground. Mm-hmm. 5% are these trolls who are like, oh, you're going to make fun of me for orange straps? I'm going to put pink straps on.
Right,
in which case, like, okay, so you're making your student's product worse to prove some idiot on the internet wrong?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Cool.
I want to get something clarified once and for all. You might have clarified this numerous times, but I don't listen to you. The stock Yamaha speaker setup, you know, the one where they
sell... The McCormick Special.
Yeah, the McCormick Special. What's the correct or best way to position the speakers? Flat on their side or standing up, or, you know?
Well, like anything in audio, it depends. But I would say for most marching applications, you want them vertically. Basically, while the speaker is round, there's a cone, which does all the high frequencies, is a directional. It's 90 degrees one way. And I think on the Yamaha, it's only 40 degrees, maybe 60 degrees the other way. So if you have it horizontally, you're probably going to have a pretty big gap in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Versus vertically, you're going to have that 90 degrees going left to right, which will give you a little more even coverage. Honestly, it's what's really important is the actual tilt angle of them, and that a lot of times the reason the horizontal is so bad is because those speakers have a built-in angle on them, and they go, oh, it fits right on top of the subs and it's kind of aiming up, but really that default angle is for when it's in a floor, like a stage monitor wedge, mm-hmm. like you'd see at a concert, like for to get, let the singer hear themselves.
Right, yeah.
And which is a pretty steep angle because it needs to get from the ground to 6 feet high, mm-hmm. in, you know, very little space. Well, in our activity, basically you're shooting into the sky, and most of your sound is just going over the judges, or not even making it there. So figuring out what the angle is. Most high school stadiums, you're anywhere from 20. Texas is maybe like 28 degrees.
So you need to add 28 degrees, or?
Well, you just tilt them back.
Yeah, right. Forward. So you get a little block, or
yeah.
like
well, and a actually piece of a lot of room. Exactly, just shove it. You know, it doesn't have to be fancy.
Right.
There's actually an app that comes with the iPhone. It's called Measure Now. It used to be in the Compass app, but if you tap over, it has a digital level, and so you can kind of just use your phone, you know, until the front lines up with the back, like a sight to the top of the box, and then you can just see, oh, 27 degrees.
27 degrees.
Or whatever it is.
So why does McCormick's sell it to look like you just put your speaker flat on top of the sub and you're good to go? Like, it's almost, I don't want to say false advertising, but you're telling band directors who may not know better, because we didn't go to electronical school, that's how you put speakers on, tie a strap around it, and there we go.
Right. You'd have to ask them that. I don't know. That's my politician's answer. Mm-hmm. I think if you look on their website, I believe they sell a lot more packages now that may be in the correct orientation. I know, like, pageantry has some carts that allows you, mm-hmm. to have them in either orientation, but makes it much easier to do that. I think it was originally, you know, no one had any idea about
right.
any of this stuff, and it was a way to be like, okay, we can just weld some steel together and put casters on it, sub in that, mm-hmm. speaker on top, boom, there you go. It's one cable you plug in, everyone's like, perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot more knowledge out there now, I think, which is great.
How do you prefer to position the angle, not top to bottom, but left to right? You see so many people pull their things up and then they all angle them into the middle. Is that right, wrong, incorrect? What's the best way?
It depends on how many speakers you have and how far apart they are and what the different coverage is. For like the stock McCormick's setup, you're going to want to angle in a little bit. Those speakers aren't really designed for what we do. They don't have enough throw as far as getting sound over the distance. So angling them in at least aims them a little bit, but I see a lot of people like 45 degrees.
Yes.
Where they're kind of crossing each other. And, that creates actually a lot of dead pockets from phase cancellation. So maybe like 10 degrees in right around there. Depending on how far out they are.
So you get on a plane and you strike up a conversation with the person next to you.
No, an unrealistic situation.
But for the purposes of this podcast.
Go ahead.
And they ask you, what do you do? What do you tell them?
It depends on how generous I'm feeling.
Well, if you're talking to them, apparently you're feeling generous.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Sometimes I just say I'm an audio consultant and I just go around consulting people about their sound systems and how to make them better. Sometimes if they press or if they're familiar with marching band, I'll kind of go into it. Sometimes I just tell them my old job because
it makes more sense. Because they understand churches.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I just install that or whatever.
Right.
Oh. I used to have a thing where when I would get my haircut, I would just make something up because I didn't want to explain it.
Because you have to, yeah.
But it backfired once because they gave me their card. They're like, oh, we need to install a new sound system here, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, great. Call me.
So you can't afford me.
Yeah, that's what it should be.
So, Eric, how does one become an audio engineer for the marching arts or pageantry? Do you have a sound recording technology degree?
I do not.
Oh.
In fact, a lot of people who do sound professionally don't have any, quote, formal training through like an accredited university. A lot of it, it's one of the few careers still that is still very apprentice based. A lot of guys, they start working for a production company and they're wrapping cables and pushes and cases, and then, you know, the A2 needs help swapping out the batteries on the wireless mics, and then they need someone to sync, and then, you know, you can kind of just work your way up. I was very fortunate to kind of go that route and have some really good mentors who really took me under the wing and, you know, like taught me how to solder, taught me what to listen for, like showed me what they were doing and why they were doing it. Really, really thankful for that. There are increasingly more programs for that, for live audio. Some of them are better than others. I would, if you're looking to get into that, I would suggest looking for an accredited university rather than a school that's solely recording, for a couple reasons. One, the recording ones tend to be for profit and your mileage may vary. Another reason to go the university route is a lot of them, I know Western Carolina has a really great recording program, and they actually, at least they did, used to require you to also perform on a primary instrument and go through whatever, because it is so, you know, I tell my band director clients this all the time. The knobs and buttons are easy. I can teach you what everything does. What's hard is knowing what it's supposed to sound like. And, you know, as a band director, as a musician, you have such a step ahead when you're mixing, if you know what good balance blend sound is, then you can say, oh, I can use these knobs and these buttons and these tools to get what I want, rather than a lot of the people go, oh, I want to mix rap records or whatever. they go and they learn what all the knobs and buttons do, and they're playing with all this other stuff, and it's like, but it doesn't sound good. Yeah. Like, yeah, it looks very complicated, but
it
doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it's like people who want to learn how to write music, so they learn how to use Finale or Sibelius, or drill writers like, oh, I can use Pyware like crazy. It's like, great, you know the nuts and bolts, but you don't know how to design. You don't know how to write.
Right, right.
So
that's the hard part.
Yeah. Now, you marched the Bluecoats, correct?
Yes.
And you played timpani for the Bluecoats?
And I did march. I had one set.
Oh my god!
My rookie year.
What shows did you march? Just don't tell me the years, because I know show names.
Kinexus.
Oh, yes.
Was my
So that's the one where you went on the field and you
Yeah, you bet. I had drill. I had body.
I think Matt Hahn was in that pit.
Oh, yeah.
I think he said the exact same thing to me a few weeks ago. He's like, yeah, we went out. We all held hands. I got to march for the Bluecoats.
We were so mad when they told us because we were like, yeah, we get dot books. Give me. And they wouldn't even give us dots. Like, they just told the first person to connect to the form and everyone else just space evenly between. And we were such, like, jerks about it. Like, we'd do that, and they'd be like, reset, and we'd, like, sprint back to the pit. Be like, first, second, third. Just.
Yeah. Wonderful pit kids.
So, Kinexus, Criminal, Boxing, whatever it was actually called, and Cloud People.
I think it was The Boxer.
Yeah, okay.
And then.
No, it was Knockout.
What? That's a good name for a show.
Yeah.
Knockout. And then the Cloud Show, the umbrella with
Was it Imagine? I know we
played Imagine. Yeah, it was Imagine. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I marched 6 years of drum corps and I ended facing backfield in a Cloud shirt, waving my arm.
Like you were doing a tambourine roll?
No, I don't know. I don't even know. Like fanning yourself in church dramatically.
Oh, yeah. Why were all these people changing their profile pictures on Facebook to the Cavaliers timpani player?
It wasn't timpani player.
Oh.
He, I believe he was playing vibraphone in that picture. Yeah. Or maybe he was playing Kurtali.
Uh-huh.
He was getting married that next day. And some of us, his friends, thought it would be funny. Like, you know how, like, sometimes, like, the bachelor or the bachelorette party is like, oh, you're last, you know, like, oh, you're going to be ball and chain or whatever.
Right.
So we thought it'd be funny if we were like, RIP.
Gotcha.
And then it just kind of caught on like wildfire. And then I had a bunch of people messing me like, dude, what happened? Like, he's a young guy. Like, what? Like, this is so tragic. I'm like, no, he's just getting married.
For the longest time, I thought that's what you look like. I thought that's who you were.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought it was you. So I'm sorry. No. That's another. I wanted to wait till you're on the podcast to officially apologize.
Clear it up.
Yeah. Thanks. What are some myths about sound and speakers, et cetera, as it pertains to the marching arts that you would like to dispel once and for all?
That they make bands sound better.
Yeah. That's a good myth.
Okay. They do make you sound better. Otherwise, we wouldn't use them. But I think the percentage they do and the perception of the percentage they make bands, and especially soloists, better is very, very different. It's very small, you know. I'm fortunate enough to work with a lot of really good programs. And I had one last year. This incredible soprano saxophone. I mean, it sounded like $1 million. It sounded like a recording. And I had another client. I was like, oh, why doesn't ours sound like that? And I had designed both systems, so they had literally the same mixer, same speaker, the same microphone.
Yeah.
And I'm the same sound guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, their player is much better than yours.
Yeah.
You know, bad sound in is just louder sound out. You know, you can take some of the ugliness off a little bit, but, you know, tone and pitch and musical inflection, all that stuff, that's on the player. I always say, you know, my job is to make it the student's fault if it sounds bad. You know, I just want to make it sound as transparent as possible. You know, I'll have people, you know, I mix for the Flow Marching, a lot of the Bands of America DCI stuff.
And
someone's like, oh, like, how's it sounding? You know, and I never say, oh, it sounds great or it sounds good. I always say, it is a very accurate representation of what is currently happening on the field right now.
Which is what you want.
Yeah, because sometimes it sounds bad. But the mix is great. Just
right. You're just broadcasting sounds, right?
Yeah. So I think another thing is, I don't know if this is a myth, but just there's so many knobs and buttons and things that you can go down the rabbit hole on all this stuff that it's really easy to always think that it's some sort of technical issue rather than a compositional issue or a performance issue with the humans, when really a lot of the times that's the issue. So I think trying to stay out of the rabbit hole of electronics thing when you're really trying to fix a band, you know, especially kind of like early season. Like, do not worry about balance and all that, all the intricacies of whatever in early September. Get your closer on the field.
Yeah.
Make sure you play together. Make sure you're sounding great, because the balance is going to change, right? Yes. Especially in marching band. Man, in September, you've got maybe 2/3 of your kids playing.
That's the thing.
Maybe. Uh-huh. I mean, you've got these freshmen and sophomores that are just trying to survive out there, correct, trying to not get destroyed in the drill. They're not putting out any
snow. No.
But by, you know, mid-October and, you know, early November, now we're all playing and now we're cooking and now it's a totally different ball game. So don't kind of get down into the weeds too early with all that stuff. You know, make it sound okay, but don't worry too much about it, because it's going
to
change.
I think one of the issues when I used to teach was that band directors were trying to mix from the tower, and the tower like 3 feet from the pit. And so you're hearing nothing but pit. The pit's too loud. It's like, no, go back 20 feet. It's completely different.
A lot of my clients, I suggest just taking like 10 dB off the speakers if that's their rehearsal environment.
That's what,
like,
we used to do.
just start with them lower, you know.
I thought you were going to say, we suggest everyone gets a scissor lift and goes far away in 28 mile per hour winds.
Terrifying.
I hate scissor lifts.
Oh, me too.
Even on a no wind day, I hate it.
Yeah. Well, when we were on like grass too, like, so it wasn't like a concrete, and like, what you couldn't see is there's like a drainage ditch just to our left. So you're like looking and you're like, oh, or this, you know, it's going to rain or whatever. And the ground's going to get soft and we're just going to tilt all the way over.
Tilt. Did you really? Wait, are you the one that's responsible for the most overused audio technique in marching band of the last few years, the pitch bend?
Oh, no, because the most overused audio technique is reverb.
That was another thing I was going to say. It's like, three of them. Reverb, the boom, you know, the bass drop, and then the pitch bend.
The pitch bend was actually Doug Thrower's idea.
Oh, that's cool.
We almost did it in 2009, actually.
Is that the America show?
Imagine.
Oh, imagine. Oh, wow.
He had always wanted to have this idea where, like, the brass is playing, but they're not, and they somehow get modified, and you don't know. They actually, they did something kind of pitch bendy as an effect, but it just sounded like they were not playing in tune. But they basically, if you look at the end of the opener, they're playing this just loud chord and they're like running straight forward, and it's like almost a mini like Doppler effect.
Sure.
And I was like rolling on a B flat, so I was like, whoa, here we go. But yeah, it's interesting. Is I think what was unique about all those Blue Coat shows I worked on is it wasn't all the audio ideas weren't coming from the audio arranger, and all the visual ideas weren't coming from the visual. It was a lot of that stuff was the visual guy saying, I'm so sick of having a microphone in the pit for the soloist and they always have to get there and you can't see them and it's boring. Well, can we put them on the field? And it's like, well, you can, but you wouldn't hear them because the speakers are up front. It's like, well, can we just put the speakers on the field?
Right. You're like,
sure.
Yes.
Just take 10 years off my life.
That's right. So did you work on kinetic noise?
I did.
So let me ask, I asked this question with already my opinion. It's incredibly underrated and didn't get scored as high because people didn't understand how hard and how cool what you were doing was, right?
It is my favorite show that I ever worked on. And critique was a challenge every night because a lot of people didn't understand what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget this comment. We're in critique and one of the judges goes, yeah, you know, you guys play really well, and I want to give you more credit, but I just can't tell where the brass stops and the electronics start. And I go, congratulations, you understand our show.
Exactly.
That's literally the point.
Right.
But electronics aside, I think what was really kind of groundbreaking was just the use of minimalism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of real music in there. And you know, we'd have a judge like, man, I heard this Mellophone line last night and it was great and I just didn't hear it. I heard this like other thing here today. And I was like, well, where are you sitting yesterday? Side 240. Where were you today? Side 140. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the beauty. I mean, Steve Reich is like my favorite composer. Mm-hmm. I love that you hear something different every time, depending on where you're sitting or what your mood is or what you're listening on. Like, to me, that's the whole magic of it, and to do that on a football field was really, really cool. Now that year took years off my life because it was my second year teaching I was hired to teach the pit, and we had no audio people. It was me. So I was doing double duty.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were on just a shoestring budget, you know.
That's insane, because they had how many speaker carts and stuff on the field?
Well, yeah. Well, okay. So it ended up being about $2,000 per pod.
Mm-hmm.
We had four of them.
Okay.
How much does a flugelhorn cost?
I don't know, $20?
More than that.
Okay, okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I play drums.
For sure more. You know, I'm just saying, you know, you see a lot of groups are like, oh, we're going to have, you know, the trumpets all play flugelhorns or like whatever. You know, mm-hmm. This was considerably less than doing that. But, man, it was shoestring and duct tape, basically. You know, because no one had done anything remotely
right.
like that. Mm-hmm. And so we were pushing around the idea. It's like, well, if you're really going to do this, you would do that. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, that's really expensive. It's like, well, you could technically do it this way.
Yeah.
And it should work most of the time. That's what we went with.
Right.
And it was a very stressful summer. But it paid off. Like I said, it's one of my favorite shows that I worked on. I actually saw recently someone did an 8-bit version of it. And like, it holds up so well. Because the music, you know, it's not like the brass and the whatever. Like, the mm-hmm. actual music on the page is mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. really, really, really good.
Yeah. It's a good show. This wasn't a question for you until you just started talking about it. I think Doug Thrower is the most underrated arranger in DCI. What do you think about that?
I mean,
you can call him underrated.
Well, yeah. I mean, he just got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, and he's one of. I just think that when people talk about like the Mount Rushmore, I don't know that he's typically one of those that people, because you say, oh, Jay and Wayne, like those are usually the top two, and then you hear like Scott, and they're all great, and you probably hear Jim Prime, you know, hear all these things, and then you get to Doug, and like Doug's been amazing. Didn't have to win championships to be considered right. an amazing arranger. I've always just loved what he's done, and I'm glad the Bluecoats have risen to the level where now everyone's like Doug Thrower, you know. But I just think he's been sort of underrated, if you can call it.
Yeah, I mean he's incredible, and he has, I think, such a willingness to adapt and change and try new things musically, and not just kind of like stick. Now he's got his identity, like everyone does. You're like, sure. That's a Doug Thrower chord,
right?
No, I know those added tones, but I think he keeps kind of reinventing himself mm-hmm. and just saying, oh, okay, let's do it,
right?
And I mean, he's like the funniest dude in the world too.
I'll take your word for it. I don't know him personally.
Oh, it's
Doug,
it's
come on the podcast.
Hilarious. Yeah.
What are bands, drum corps, indoor percussion groups doing wrong when it comes to sound? We can go as long as we want.
Oh my god! Yeah, I got a rehearsal in 7 hours. I'm not sure we're gonna make it. What are they doing wrong?
Pick the big ones. Like you go to you record Flow. Do you do WGI for Flow also?
A couple. I think I do maybe two a year.
Okay, but you do you tour as a teacher, as a designer, right. as an audio engineer. So you've seen the biggest groups and the smallest groups, and I'm sure a lot of the problems are consistent whether you have 40 people, whether you have 400 people. People are still making mistakes,
right?
Like what are the big three, or what are you always like, I know I'm gonna see these things?
Oversaturation or reverb on soloists is yes. the big thing.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just, you know, it's like anything else, the pendulum has swung the other way. So it used to be like, if you knew how to add reverb to the soloist, you were like, it's like being able to program your VCR back in the day. You were like in the top 5%. And then everyone figured it out and
right.
was like, oh, finally reverb.
Yeah.
Crank.
Yeah.
And it just sounds like you're in a canyon.
It does.
And there's no definition to the sound or whatever. And we're getting to a point now to where even some judges are like, oh, more reverb. I'm like, no. It's fine. You know, reverb is a tool designed to line up what you're hearing with what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can hear pretty good reflections in this room, lots of hard surfaces. And if you were to see a video of us talking, it would make sense
because sure.
we're in a medium-sized room and mm-hmm. you hear all those reflections. If you were to, you know, play a clarinet or a flute 2 inches from a mic in a giant stadium, it would sound like they're in a practice room and that there's a disconnect there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So reverb is just essentially an artificial room
mm-hmm.
making it sound more natural. Now you can obviously use it for an effect or whatever.
Yeah.
But generally, you just want to make it sound like they're not 2 inches from the mic. Mm-hmm. Just soften mm-hmm. it up a little bit, you mm-hmm. know? to me, the reverb is kind of like the synth bass. Like you start it quiet and you turn it up until you can hear it. And then as soon as you can hear it, turn it down just a little bit. Yeah. And then that's it. You know, like unless like I did, I forget what kind of a show it is, but it started with this alto flute, like very like kind of creepy. So like I did a ton of reverb and I actually did like a delay where like and then it echoed, echoed out the other side. Mm. Like that was something that was a design choice on purpose to get a very specific effect. Mm-hmm. For your everyday solo, it's too much. And especially when you're doing ensembles and you got three or four parts at a time, they're also just muddy. There's just no, there's no definition. That's the big one.
That is huge.
EQing by increasing the frequencies rather than taking away is a big one. So EQ, like reverb, you know, all these audio tools were solutions to problems that exist. It wasn't like, ooh, I want to be able to create weird sounds and make some frequencies louder than others. It's like, huh, this mic doesn't make my voice sound like it normally does. I wonder if we could fix that.
Right.
So, you know, at its core, EQ, equalization, is just making the frequency response flat. Every speaker, every mic has a different recreation of the sound. That's not perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, like the mics we're talking on now do bass a lot better than say some other mics. So depending on what you want, you may need to kind of tone that down a little bit.
Right.
Depending
right.
on what you're recording. So, you know, when you get a player and you're EQing and it's like, oh, I want to hear more of the mid range. Well, your problem probably isn't that you're not picking enough mid-range. It's that the bass or the high frequency is too loud. So when you turn the mic up to what you want, that stuff is too loud. Mm-hmm. So if you turn down the stuff you don't want, you then have more of the stuff you want.
Right.
So I'll go into a lot of places and just the EQ is just really cranked on low frequencies. Like, yeah, like we keep getting feedback or whatever. It's like, well, you know, that's how that happens. What else? Speaker placement is just the other big thing. Right. Putting speakers, behind the mics, or into a wall or not angled or angled too much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes a world of difference putting your speakers in the right. And mic placement, that's the other huge, you know, before you reach for the EQ or the compressor or any of that other stuff, move the mic around to a spot. And the first thing I do when I'm micing up like a soloist or whatever is I'll turn the system off and I'll take the microphone and I'll move it 10 feet away and I'll stand in front of them and say, play your part.
Yeah.
So I can hear it and listen what it's supposed to sound like. You know? And then I move the microphone kind of to where it is and it's a little bit trial and error. Yeah. But experiment with mic positioning first, and then this is the important part, take a picture of it, have the kid write down what it's supposed to be, put a little tape mark on the prop.
Yeah.
Because it's incredible how much of a difference 6 inches makes.
When is the last time you did the cha-cha slide?
Oh my gosh.
Been to a wedding recently?
Yeah. I think the last time I did, I was probably in like elementary grade school at like a family friend's wedding.
Oh, so yeah. You didn't do it at your own wedding?
No, we didn't have the cha-cha slide.
Did you do the electric slide?
No.
Did you do the wobble? Did you do any line dancing at your wedding?
No line dancing. Oh. It was in New Jersey.
Oh.
But it was New Year's Eve. So it was more of like a party than a wedding.
Yes. Yes. That makes sense. What's been the most rewarding project thus far in your career?
I mean, 2015 Blue Coats was my favorite show that I've ever worked on. Mm-hmm. But part of it because the music was such what I enjoy personally. It was my favorite type of music. Plus, it was such a challenge. It was so different. You know, like at this point, you know, like if you take away props or field speakers or like whatever, like you can clean ensemble timing stuff, like whatever, like that's pretty much, you know, what you're going to do and how you're going to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
With that show, it was like, let's try some stuff. Cause I have, you know, I think the craziest thing we did was the trumpet loop section the electric counterpoint. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we had four pods spread across the field, and each pod played a part, and the other one played it starting on a different beat. But as one pod stopped, we came in with the synth playing the same thing out of the speaker. Well, the issue was the speakers were in the back, and the synth, it was actually a DTX drum pad, was in the front. So if they're listening back for time and they play on beat one, right, it's going to come out the speaker like a dotted 5/16th note late.
Sure.
Right? So we're like, how can we figure this out? So what I figured out was, instead of fighting the delay, we can use the delay to our advantage. So instead of it being a dotted fivelet, what if we just added enough delay to where when he hit it, it was an exact beat late.
Right.
Like an eighth note late. So what we did is we figured that out. We made it an eighth note late. And then we said to the guy playing the part, relearn your part an eighth note early. Which it ended up being easy because it was almost straight eighth notes.
Right, right.
We did the same thing in 2017. We had the giant stage and speakers in the back, and the drum solo was actually a marimba piece that was written for marimba and backing track. And it starts with this like cool like drum thing. And I was like, man, it would be way better if that came out the back speakers. Mm-hmm. So we did the same thing. But that was hard because it's like, goom, geek, gong. I mean, the drum set player was just a rock star. And like, I wrote it out and I was like, hey, I know you've been playing this part for 2 months, but can you just learn the whole thing a quarter note earlier? And he did. I mean, it was way cooler. But that's what I enjoyed about that show, was just all the new challenges and problem solving and trying to make it work. And I think it turned out really well.
Wow, I feel like we could just talk about that show forever, because there's so much stuff that goes in there that nobody probably knows unless you know. What's your most prized material possession? Probably that hat.
No, I got a lot of hats. I actually left mine on the plane last week, The one I've been wearing. My material possessions?
Yeah.
I don't really have any like sentimental objects, so... utilitarian, I would just say my laptop. My stuff on it.
It's your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a solid answer.
Yeah. If we're saying material, I mean, obviously, yeah, if my house is on fire, I'm grabbing the dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I specify material.
Right.
Because, well, of course, it's like, yes, I know. Like, right, my wife and I, we know kid, dog, you know, or external hard drive. Like,
yeah,
that's it. That's exactly it. So, what is something about audio engineering that you didn't expect?
How creative it can be.
Ooh.
I think when I really felt like I got a hang of it was I was EQing a drum set, and like the tom was ringing, you know, just a lot like they do. And mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, I can just put a gate on that and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh, it was kind of where I first felt that switch from, I know what all these knobs and buttons do, to like using them all as just like a tool in my toolkit, you know, right, like going up and like, oh, you know, that light switch cover is loose. Let me just get my screwdriver, mm-hmm, you know, and mm-hmm, just kind of, but there's so many different ways to get what you need. And I think that's what's rewarding it. I don't know if it's, there's, I've been wrestling with this idea. This, we can get this on the podcast. I've been wrestling with this idea of about, who is an artist and what is truly art versus a creative endeavor. I guess to me, art is something that has like purpose and emotion behind it versus something that's just creative.
Sure.
You know, like I feel like when I mix live broadcast for Flow, it's very creative to be able to get it to sound right, and how much of this mic do I use versus this one, and mm-hmm, like, okay, you know, their left speaker is not working, do I do that or do I take the right speaker and pan it center so we can at least hear it and it doesn't sound like my mic's messing up,
right? Yeah,
stuff like that, versus if I'm recording an album and I'm trying to make it sound, that's a lot more artistic, creative.
Ooh.
So I don't know. I don't have an answer. Someone posted something about like judging being an art. I'm like,
come on.
I don't know. It's very, you know, it takes a lot of skill and there's a lot of nuance, but like, I would hope you're not judging to express your views or whatever. You just calling balls and strikes. But
yeah. Well, as we know, the strike zone is very different from player to player. What is the last piece of music you listened to?
I actually don't listen to music a lot in my free time. believe it or not.
Because you need to give your ears a rest?
Yeah, that's it.
Seriously, like Celine Dion? Oh, she doesn't talk.
Oh, I don't know. I started getting into politics because I was teaching a band. Not like a politician, but like...
I was going to say, wait a minute, this took a... Oh my God, Eric Cosman's announcing his...
I'm running for president. I was teaching and it was like an hour 15 drive and, you know, I would get there at 7 a.m. and I would teach lessons all day and then do marching band rehearsal and then more lessons and then drive home. My ears just like, I couldn't stay awake. So I had to listen to something, but like music was just like too much. So I just had like news radio on or whatever. Oh, okay. So it kind of, what was the last song? Oh, you know what it was? It was Sarah Bareilles cover of Yellow Brick Road live with the, I think it was the National Symphony. You have to look it up. It is like Goosebump City. She is such an amazing performer. You know, she's a great singer, technically, whatever. But the emotion, you know, it's almost like watching like a musical theater. Like the emotion and just raw human element of it is just, it's incredible. That was the last thing. I was looking at YouTube for Color Guard show ideas.
Oh, Eric Cosman, Color Guard show designer.
No, just my wife sent me a track to look and then it went down the rabbit hole.
Yes, as one does. Who is your favorite designer of all time?
What medium? You're taking the king of the king?
You can do
one to rule them all?
You can. You could. Oh, I ask this question and people always, but I feel like it maybe you're going to present someone that's like not even in the marching arts. Oh. Like you may be like, oh, you know, Taraka, you know, Tarakumi, you know, I can't even say his name right.
But I'm not nearly that fancy.
But maybe it could be music, it could be drill, it could be visual, it could be a fellow audiophile engineer. Artist, painter.
Designer. I guess, does that include composers?
Sure.
I got to go with Steve Reich.
Oh, yes.
It's just, it's incredible. And the people are going to make fun of me, but the variety of what he does. Sure. I know it's all, but I mean, it's just, it was game changing, but at the same time, so traditional. Like,
right.
I compare Reich a lot to like Mozart fugues on a harpsichord that has no dynamics, you know, so many times say, oh, you just need more musicality. And what they really mean is more crescendo.
Of course.
It's like, there's so much musicality outside of that.
Right.
And when you strip that away, I think it opens up a whole other avenue. And I think that's what I really like about his music is it's just a blank slate.
Sounds like a good indoor color guard show idea. Blank slate. No?
I'm sure it's never been done before.
Never. Never. Who is one designer, performer, teacher that we should be listening to right now?
That you should be listening to?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
There's nobody that's underrated or like, this, you need to listen to this person. This person's got some great ideas or spouting some knowledge that we should be...
Talking the band world?
Sure. Why not? Maybe the audio world.
Maybe the audio world?
We wouldn't know anybody that you mentioned, except for the guy that went to jail for murder, the wall of sound guy.
Oh, yeah, don't do that.
No, don't create a wall of sound.
It's a terrible idea.
Seriously.
Lots of phasing issues.
Yeah, well, unless it's your thing, phasing.
There we go. Oh, my gosh. Who's underrated in the marching activity? Oh, you know who's really great that people are going to know and like, if they don't already, is Lindsay Schuler. She's a visual designer. She's been doing Legends the past couple years. Mm-hmm. I think she's actually a doctor of audiology, I believe.
What?
Yes.
Like ear tests and stuff like that?
She recently made the decision to go to like visual designing full time.
Wow.
I actually taught her high school when she was in high school. And then we marched together she one of those like started marching when you're 10 and marched 8 years.
Where'd she march?
She marched at Blue Stars.
Oh, okay. And you marched Blue Stars?
I did march Blue Stars, but not with her.
Wait, this wasn't in your biography. You marched the Blue Stars in a bugle corps?
Back when they were really bad.
Oh, so they hadn't made finals.
Oh, we were Div 2. This was the last year of Div 2.
Oh, this is.
We were third place.
All right, that's cool.
We were the third least worst. I was like, you know how like every band, every whatever has at least like one section or one like that's like, oh yeah, but their cymbal lines, like we're like, no, we were all just
Did you play timpani there too?
I did.
Oh.
I did.
Wow.
Yeah, I did 6 summers, all timpani.
All timpano. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible.
I almost switched to keyboards after my second year at Blue Coats, but then I was like, nah, I want to drive the four-wheeler.
Yeah, that makes carts. Sense. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Pretty cool. No, so we marched Blue Stars or Blue Coats, I think, 08, 09? Mm-hmm. And then she went to Crown. I forget when she aged out. But I think she does Walton High School and Cobb now. I mean, she does a bunch of other, but like she's really, really smart. She does a bunch of indoor drumline stuff too. So you'll be hearing from her if you don't already.
Wow. All right. If not band, I guess, what else would you be doing? I guess you could literally do this job in any medium, right? We all know sound.
We yeah. need sound. Well, that's
speakers.
that's kind of the nice thing is it's a flexible thing. I was actually getting out of band entirely. So I was percussion director at Kennesaw Mountain High School. And I was also working that install business. I kind of switched to part-time because mm-hmm. I was doing the percussion director thing. And just kind of got burned out. And I was like, oh, I'll just do the install thing full-time. And then I ended up getting a job at Kennesaw State working for the Performing Arts Center. And it was like full-time benefits, oh, like real people job. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, this is great. Weekends yeah, are right? free. And like, I have health insurance. Mm-hmm. Like, this is great. And hashtag thanks Obama had just changed the overtime exemption for salaried workers, uh-huh. almost doubled it. So I was like just under that, which meant they had to give me overtime. But since it was a school, they were allowed to give me vacation days time and a half instead of money time and a half.
Oh.
So I basically had to work one concert a week, which so I was working like 44, 45 hours mm-hmm. a week. So 5 hours times 1.5 is almost a vacation day
yeah.
a week, uh-huh. which was great, which gave me a lot of time on the weekends to start doing like some consulting stuff. Because mm-hmm. people would always ask me like, hey, will you come up and help? And I was like, oh, I have my own band. I don't have any yeah. free time.
Yeah.
So I kind of did that a little bit, but I was like going away mm-hmm. and then long story short, we moved to Austin, and I didn't have a job, and my wife did the greater Austin area.
Thank you. I just want to...
You know, it's I got to talk about this, because I think it's interesting.
Yes, let's do this.
Because I grew up in Chicago.
No, you didn't. Did you?
The greater Chicagoland
okay.
area.
All right, okay. The greater Chicagoland area.
Right? So, I think this is such a thing for you and is. Austinites.
It's my hill.
Because it had been such a small city.
Correct.
And Leander was...
The sticks.
I mean, just completely separate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But now it's obviously
correct.
Much closer, and I it think is. This is a symptom of growing.
I will not disagree. It's a deeper rooted issue with all you people that move here.
Uh huh.
And it's a love hate thing.
Carpet baggers.
It is. And here's the thing, Hillary. We don't get to have all the cool stuff in this city without y'all moving here. So I love that we have the Domain and stores and restaurants. Our city is not built to handle half of what we have.
No.
So, yes, traffic has always been bad, but it's never been as bad as it's been. I know that you're... Let's talk about real traffic.
It's fine.
I know. People from big cities are like, oh, we can deal with this. This is nothing.
Yeah. I mean, for you, I'm sure it's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's like, okay, it's bad at rush hour, and then it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Every other time.
It's just... I am that truly... rarity where I was born in Austin
yeah
and like I left to go to school and whatever, but I'm back here. So you meet 10 people, I bet 3 of them are from here, and they're not all from California or whatever. Right. So but then people are like, oh, I love Austin, it's so great. Oh, Austin, I gotta go back to my house in Pflugerville. Oh,
right,
you don't live in Austin. You literally do not live in Austin.
To note, we are 3/4 of a mile from Pflugerville right now.
I just would like to note that I live in Austin.
What's
interesting,
just the tip.
When my wife and I were expecting her healthcare plan, she said, well, our daughter's going to be born at St. David's Hospital in Round Rock. And I said, no, she's not. My wife literally changed her healthcare plan so that she could be born at St. David's here by P. Terry's in Austin. She was like, that's how much I love you because you love your city so much.
I heard on NPR, this Texas guy was living or stationed in Alaska for work. And he had someone literally ship dirt from Texas to Alaska. He sterilized it and then poured it underneath the hospital bed so that his child would be born over Texas soil. There's
oh
some,
my God.
That's some next level stuff.
I don't know what to say. That's amazing. Yeah. That's fantastic. If I ever have to move.
Yeah. So instead of switching health insurance, maybe you just get a shovel full of dirt.
Now I know. Now I know what I need to do. This is a great idea. The girl, if you're listening to this and she doesn't listen to these podcasts, this is what we might have to do if we ever decide to have another one. That's fantastic. Yeah. But we are in Austin, Texas proper. So that's right. I don't even know where we got onto this. You just decided to take me in. Because you were talking about doing audio Kennesaw. You could go teach vacation days. How do we get to this? Doesn't matter. When have you felt?
Oh, I said we moved to Austin.
Oh, you moved to Austin. All right,
continue
this.
And you said, quote, Austin.
Quote, because you're like, we moved to Austin. So, yeah.
No.
Can continue with that.
So, my wife took the color guard director job at Vista Ridge, and I was gainfully unemployed. Mm. And I had a couple bands in Texas that I'd worked with before, and I was like, I can teach lessons. I'll teach a pit. Like, there's plenty of band work in Texas.
There are. That's why you people keep moving here.
Yeah.
And then you start complaining about it on Facebook.
I don't actually. I love the UI. I'm a rare bird. I think the UIL thing is great.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm dead serious.
Finish your story and okay. We're going to talk about this.
All right.
Because I'm glad that you brought this up. I really want to talk about it with somebody.
And then people just started calling, hey, can you come fix our sound system? Can you help us install this? What should we buy? And then like before I knew it, my entire fall was booked. And I was like, oh, well, I can just do this. This works great.
Yeah.
Okay, so UIL.
Yeah. Well, let me preface this with this. I have always had a problem, not with the people moving to Texas, because, yes, we're Texas, right? It's the people who move here because of our facilities, that you have 4 band directors, our talent, our kids, our funding, all that stuff, and they complain about it. It's like, you're going to move here and take advantage of all that we have to offer.
Or they want to change it.
And I'm okay with wanting to change to a certain extent, but it's also this... UIL sucks. I can't believe all these old man judges, blah, blah, drums are too loud. You know, back in Illinois, it's like, great. Why don't you move back to Illinois? You'll be much happier over there. Oh, you didn't like only having this much money? Like, I know that's a generalization and I'm going to get people calling me out on Facebook, but you and I are used to that. But I feel like you're going to come here. You have to take it warts and all, quote unquote, though, as a UIL product, UIL isn't as bad as people think it is. Percussionists out there. But Eric, let's talk about that.
I'm going to start with this. UIL is the reason Texas Band is what it is.
Correct. 1,000,000% correct.
And I think a lot of people maybe outside the state don't realize how different the rules are and the judging system is, which again, I think is great. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking about like adding captions and going to more like, you know,
whatever they're going to do.
I'm not for it. And, right. I'll tell you why. Every other year, you have to march and play really, really well.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to do well.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps keep a balance. Mm-hmm. And it strives, people strive to be really, not that they wouldn't strive better, but it's like, oh, mm-hmm. okay, we don't need, quote, need all the props and the huge GE or whatever.
Sure.
We just need you know. But when you add that incredible marching and playing, yep. to that,
yes.
that's why Texas Band is what it is. And I think if UIL becomes essentially like on the BOA sheets, I think you're going to lose a lot of what makes the Texas Band mm-hmm. what it is. I think, me personally, I think the less specific captions judges are judging, the better. And that's the hottest take, I'm sure.
Most people, I think somebody just like, I hate that. I have to judge this, you know.
Someone was talking to me in the summer about adding an audio judge. And I was like, absolutely not. Are you out of your mind?
And this is for summer or for year round?
I forget.
I'm sure it'll be in WGI.
It was for one of them. And I was just like, no. Because here's, I think this is more of a problem in DCI than BOA. But partly, I think, because DCI still has caption awards that count towards the score.
Right.
So... when you want to do well in drums or horns or whatever, there's this, is this good for the show musically or is this good for my drum score? And it's a balancing act. And yeah. some people like that game. They like playing that like, ooh, how can we do this? And of course you want it. But to me, I am more a big picture guy.
Yes.
It should serve mm-hmm. the whole.
It
and
should.
I think if you, now my compromise, all the visual designers and percussion people, here's what I want to do.
Okay.
Grand plan.
All right, here we go.
Compromise.
I'm ready for it.
You can keep your drum trophy, your horn trophy, your guard trophy. We're still going to have those judges.
But?
they won't count towards the score. It'll be like sports where you either win the Stanley Cup,
right,
or you don't.
Sure.
But you can be the MVP. You can be the best goal scorer, the best defenseman, the Lady Bing Award for sportsmanship.
Oh, Miss Congeniality.
Essentially is whoever has the least penalty minutes.
The more teeth?
Yeah, the more teeth.
The most teeth, pardon me. That's a lot way a lot of UIL-based contests do here. They'll do whatever, but then they have an individual caption for color guard and percussion, and it does not incorporate into the score at all.
Because I think it's important to have specific feedback for those students to someone who's specialized, mm-hmm. and I think there's something to be said for competitive, you know, nature being a motivator and mm-hmm. who's the best drumline.
Yeah.
But I want that to be with an asterisk. Who's the best drumline kind of in the context of the whole show? Not right. Who's the best drumline we can write a drum corps show around and it's a decent drum corps show, but it's really indoor drumline show featuring the Winds.
Yes, I've judged, and I don't know if you have judged in the state. You're probably too busy coordinating.
I've done some drumline shows.
Yeah, you know, in marching band, sometimes you can definitely. Oh, they have an indoor drumline in the spring. You can tell because they're playing grade 5 literature, and the band just
right.
You know,
and playing again, chuchutas. There's something to be said for going to your strengths or whatever.
Absolutely.
And I think in BOA, there's no drum trophy. So right. If they're doing that, it's because that's their mm-hmm. strongest section. And if you plan around it musically for that to make sense, that's fine.
Yeah, agreed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of design decisions that are much more, should we or shouldn't we, mm-hmm. based mm-hmm. on a score that's only 10 points
right.
versus all of the other ones. And I think from a global entertainment, grow the activity standpoint, you know, how many times have you been like, oh, yeah, check out this show. Like, the drum line is really cool.
Right.
And everyone's like, what? they look good.
Yeah, sure.
I don't, you know, they don't know clean or whatever. Not that we should play dirty beats, but let's make sure that the show itself mm-hmm. is what's entertaining and that the excellence is just kind of, oh, yeah, for the people who know, like, and they're really, really
sure.
good.
Absolutely.
At it. And I think having less specific judges would encourage that.
I will say I don't take issue with what you said, but it's a very common quote of UIL show versus a BOA show, right? And I think that anybody who can watch the top 10, top 12 finalists at UIL 6A State is hard-pressed to find a difference, that big of a difference between BOA San Antonio finals. Granted, they're probably 10 of the same bands, and right. there's a few that go in and out, but Vista Ridge just won state last year with what many would consider to be a quote-unquote BOA show. They had props, they had electronics,
right.
and if they had taken that show to Grand Nationals, they obviously would have made finals, and they probably would have scored in the top third. They might have medaled. Who knows? And, you know, you look at Flower Mound, you look at Marcus, these programs that have continuously done really well. Reagan, Claudia Taylor and Reagan, two of the most, like, electronically BOA bands, and they're top half of state. Their honor bands are top half, you know, that kind of thing. So the lines are being blurred more and
correct.
More as we go on. But I will agree that it is because of the restrictions or the whatever that UIL does that allows these bands to be that good. Like, it's just, that's why we play really well. That's why we march really well, UIL. And so I love it. And I'm not just saying it because I came from it. And you can catch me at the State Marching Contest broadcast. But
hey-o.
But. Without UIL, there's a lot of things that wouldn't happen. And that's just not music. They do it in art. They do it in academics. They do it in sports, obviously. Like, this governing body has really done a lot for any kind of thing,
right.
I guess.
And it has issues like anything else. But they started doing the mariachi.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are all these great groups, and now they have an avenue to do that. The one thing that I would like to see them do would be to split the mm-hmm. show BOA bands
versus military,
because it's not fair to the military.
It's not.
There's so many incredible
they're
bands,
really good,
but they don't stand a chance because
no.
it's so different. And how do you compare?
I think in a lower classification, and by lower I don't mean anything having to do with talent, but, you know, 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A. Now we have 6A. We have 6 classifications in Texas. I think 1 through 4, a military band can do really, really well. When you get into 5A and 6A, there are some that will make it to state and qualify for state, but I don't know that they're actually able to compete at those levels, because then you're dealing with all the smoke in the mirrors.
Yeah, I mean, how do you, as a judge, would you just, I mean, that's really hard, especially because you're not judging a caption, right? You're judging the overall.
You're judging music, you're judging visual. Right. So yeah, I think that that's something I think every year, every other year that gets brought up, like maybe we split it and they have their own separate state championships. Who knows? You know, the Alamo Dome is basically Marching Band Central in November now.
Right.
So. Wow. When have you felt the most starstruck, Eric?
Oh man, I try not to just be like, we're all human beings trying to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I once had someone in the marching arts say to me, "Do you know who I am?"
I'm sorry.
And I was like, I wanted to be really mean and be like, "Oh, you did these like kind of okay, not anything special groups, right?" But I just think your work should speak for yourself. And if you ever have to say or act like that,
mm-hmm. but I don't know, like if I were to meet Leonard Bernstein, obviously I'd be dead at this point if that happened, but that would be like,
or he'd be alive again.
Oh, that's true. Zombie Bernstein.
Yes.
Oh my God. Like there's gotta be that element. Like, but I don't know if you've ever met someone like that in your travels. I mean, now obviously when you walk through the door in this house.
Yeah, that was it.
You met my dog.
I was like, wow. Like,
this is, I've made it.
I've made it.
That's right.
I think I probably would if I met like Marian Hossa or like Patty Kane, mm-hmm. any of those Blackhawks players.
Have you?
But I haven't.
Have you ever met Steve Reich?
No, but one of my friends had. He was one of the marimba players on one of the recordings of Music for 18 Musicians.
Really?
And he came by when they were recording.
That's awesome.
And talked through some stuff.
I've only seen him when groups perform his music and he's there
I really want to. I want to, like, I don't know how much he travels anymore. He's getting up there.
But. Yeah. It's crazy to think, like, him and Philip Glass, they're old.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to die soon.
Yeah.
It's stupid life. I talked to Jen Barton.
Oh, yeah?
And, y'all are both from the Midwest.
Yes.
And she called me out because I didn't call it out on the broadcast because I've done it, or the podcast rather. Y'all say both weird.
Both?
No, see, you said it correctly. Usually y'all say both.
With an L?
Yeah, like B-O-L-T-A.
Both?
Both. And I'm over-exaggerating the L so you understand it. Like you walked in and you were talking about, I asked about your dogs and right. you said both.
Oh, I...
That's just a Midwestern thing?
Yeah, well, my accent is all... jacked up because I was born in the Chicagoland area, Des Plaines, Illinois.
I live
in Des Plaines. Yes. Oh my gosh. Let me talk to you about WGN.
Yeah. That's where I used to watch the Bozo show.
At 10 o'clock tonight.
10 o'clock tonight.
Go in your car.
In my car.
AM 720.
There.
You'll pick up WGN from Chicago.
Here in Austin, Texas?
Yes.
That's so crazy. What kind of tower are they pumping out? Like,
well, it's on top of the Sears Tower.
I was going to say, what is it called now? It's not the Sears
Tower. Willis Tower.
Yeah, I'm not going to call it that.
No, it's the Sears Tower. But I once drove from my folks' house in southern Michigan to Atlanta listening to WGN on the radio the entire way.
Oh, my gosh.
I think it's after 8 o'clock, I think. It was a clear channel back in the day, which is basically at 8 o'clock, anyone close had to shut off. So these could be for like rural,
here,
whatever. And so it's one of the last.
I just learned a lot about that. Yeah. Wow. South Michigan. So did you live in Michigan?
Yeah. So that's what I was saying. My accent is messed up.
So you had the Midwestern.
Well, it's all Midwestern, but like it was, and that's more Minnesota.
You didn't live in the UP?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
I have some of that nasally. That's more like the Chicago super fan type.
Yeah, of course.
And then I lived in Michigan for.
Where in Michigan?
Well,
you can. He's pointing to his hand right now.
Literally, it's the halfway point between Detroit and Chicago.
Okay, you can name cities. I lived in Michigan for 2 years.
Oh, Sturgis, Michigan.
Don't know that one.
Yeah, of course.
I lived in Mount Pleasant for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
I did my master's.
Fire up chips.
Something like that. Yeah.
There's a lot of really nice houses that were owned by Al Capone and the mob.
What?
Because it was halfway between Detroit and Chicago, and that's their meet to do all their.
Whoa.
Yeah. Really small town.
Mm-hmm.
So there, and then I lived everywhere. I lived in Lansing. I lived in Grand Rapids. I lived in Kalamazoo, mm-hmm. Portage. And then I moved to Atlanta. I've lived in the South now for almost 10 years.
The South meaning Atlanta, right? You're not considering Texas part of the South? Or the Southwest?
Well, you get the asterisk.
Didn't you talk about that on Facebook? Was it you that mentioned that Texas is the South or not the South?
Well, okay. if you were in the Confederacy, you're the
sorry. We have Six Flags Over Texas. That is correct. One of them was the Confederate.
The Confederate
flag. That is correct.
So, yeah. Well, yeah, it's, well, and it's with the asterisks too, because no one in Atlanta is from Atlanta. It's all transplants, very similar to Austin. But if you get an hour out,
right,
now you're in the South.
The South, the dirty.
But it's, I think it's softened my accent. I hear it when I go back up north to visit family and friends. I hear it a lot more now. Yeah. The A's.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. What item would you die to get your hands on if it went up for auction?
Well, I wouldn't die for anything because then I wouldn't have
it. Oh, my God. Be dead. I thought this was going to be fun.
I know. I hate fun. Oh, my God.
That's why you love UIL, isn't it?
Yes. I'm a grumpy old man at heart. I'm just waiting until my hair falls out and can be that old man in real life.
Yeah. My wife says I've been a curmudgeon for like since I
was. Oh, that's what my wife
calls I'm very curmudgeonly.
You're such a curmudgeon. I was like, oh, but I'm so good at it.
That's the thing, right? Come on. Embrace it. Like you said.
Just, yeah.
So what would you like to get your hands on if it went up for auction? You don't have to die.
I'm not a material person. Oh, I don't know.
Harry carries glasses.
It would honestly be something like very practical, like a car or a house or something.
All right. What, like the DeLorean from Back to the Future?
No, just something that's not a 2003 Corolla.
Those are solid cars, though.
Yeah, I know.
03, is that what you have in my car?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now? I have my 04 Dodge Dakota, man. All right. It's paid off. It just, you know, I'm going to, yeah. Thelma Louise style. We're going over.
I think I'm at 210,000 miles, good and it still gets 35 to the gallon
right.
on the highway.
And you drive that all over Texas?
Oh, yeah.
And you've gone back and forth to Chicago, Michigan?
No.
Hotlanta?
I drove it here from Atlanta, and I haven't. It hasn't left the state since then.
Oh.
But we are doing Christmas vacation, like National Lampoon style.
Yes.
And we decided, usually we just board the dogs and fly, but like it gets expensive because there are two of them and then you don't see your dogs for 2 weeks and that's not fun.
No.
So we decided, for better or worse, that we're driving to Chicago because my grandparents still live there.
In Chicago?
They live in Chicago.
Wow.
They live, well, it's Oaklawn.
I don't know what that is.
It's a city just
outside. I know Lincoln Park.
Oaklawn is the city just outside of Midway Airport.
Okay.
So like if you leave Midway Airport, you're in Oaklawn.
Oh, wow.
So they're like 10 minutes
from. Wait, so Midway's not in Chicago?
It's just outside.
Wow.
And maybe it technically
is. O'Hare in Chicago?
Yeah. Oh, oh. Well, like maybe it's like the dividing line. Like maybe it's the landmark. I actually used to live on a flight path from O'Hare Airport when we lived in Des Plaines, Illinois. Oh. Not Des Plaines, but Des Plaines.
Yeah. Oh, Des Plaines.
And I went to a parochial school that was like an old brick building, and we had no air conditioning, and O'Hare wanted to add runways, but we were right on the flight path, and so it was going to be really loud.
Yeah.
So they decided they were going to soundproof our school so everyone would vote. Well, you can't soundproof without air conditioning. So they air conditioned it as well. They all this money, right? And it didn't pass.
Oh, no.
Well, they got free air conditioning and windows on it.
So I don't know anything about Chicago other than I like the city. It's my kind of town. Are you a Cubs or a White Sox guy?
Cubs fan.
Now, it's because you're from the south side?
No.
North side?
I'm from the north side.
But and north sides are White Sox fans?
Cubs fans. What's interesting is my dad is from the south side. Oaklawn is on the south side. Okay. His entire family, White Sox fans.
Okay.
That's their one.
Because in south side is the quote-unquote working class. That's why they like the White Sox and the Cubs are the...
Well, Wrigley's on the north side of town and Comiskey is on the south side.
Sure. Okay, there's not like a
the south
blue-collar, white-collar side or anything.
Well, the south side of Chicago is where everyone gets shot. It's
great.
Yeah.
So that's what all the Republicans are talking about.
Like if you,
what about Chicago?
If you go to a Guaranteed Rate Field, whose logo is a red arrow,
the arrow going down,
which is like the perfect logo for the White Sox. If you ask me, it's not a good place of town.
Oh.
It's not good.
I've driven past it multiple times.
Yeah. And keep going.
I love that you say Comiskey. Cause I knew exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I remember old Comiskey.
Yeah. I was at both.
What was Fielder's name? The dad.
Prince?
No, isn't Prince the...
Prince is the second one.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Cecil Fielder used to hit it on top of Comiskey, I'm old. So you like the Cubs.
Yes.
And you like the Blackhawks, obviously.
Yes.
And you like the Bears.
Yes.
Wow.
Better or worse.
Are there any other Chicago sports teams that I've forgotten?
I am a Chicago sports fan, even if I don't follow the sport. So I don't follow the NBA at all.
Okay.
But I'm a Bulls fan.
Okay.
Because I'm from Chicago.
That's what you do.
I don't understand. Maybe a previous guest you had is Phillies, Florida State, like all over the board.
Penn State, yes.
And I'm like, how do you, we're not going to get into college football.
But his dad is from there.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's, I guess. Yeah.
So is it bad that I don't like the Cowboys?
I don't think it's ever bad if someone doesn't exactly. like the Cowboys. Right.
Thank you.
But you grew up in Austin. You don't have any sports teams. So you get some freedom to choose your own adventure.
I chose the Oilers, okay. The Houston Oilers. And then they left.
Yeah.
And then I'm a man without a team now. Now I just hate the Cowboys.
I don't even do fantasy sports because I will not root against my team or really for another team.
Wow, that's hardcore.
Unless it's like... I want the Cardinals to lose, so I'm
rooting you're very, for very happy about
the Schoedenfreude.
That's right. Yes. You were happy about that. So, are you rooting for the Stros? Or are you, because by the time this releases, the Nationals will have won the World Series.
Basically. Oh, he was brutal.
God, yeah, like
the, ouch.
And it's not; they weren't even at home.
Yeah, I could go. I'm down for the Astros winning, especially now that they're not in the NL anymore, which is still weird to me.
It's crazy
in my mind. They're still in NL. Team.
Yeah.
And I was getting confused, like, why are the Astros playing the Yankees in the ALCS?
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. It's like when the Brewers went from AL to NL, right? Or they switched leagues also. Or maybe they switched divisions or whatever. I don't know. So that's good. What's your worst habit?
My worst habit?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. I have so many. Just ask my wife.
Oh, well. Pick the worst.
What bothers my wife the worst? Again, that's... Oh, my gosh. That's a huge ask. I don't know if it's a habit, but it gets me in trouble a lot. I pretty much don't have a filter and just tell people what I think all the time because life's too short to sugarcoat things.
You do. You remind me of a young version of myself.
Oh yeah,
on Facebook. Though you're not that much younger than me.
I'm a big believer in like crowdsourcing and like community answers. Mm-hmm. And to me, all of this like. Well, it's maybe if it's just inhibiting that. Mm-hmm. And I think we'd get much further in society if everyone's like, yeah, I think that's not going to work.
Sure.
Based on my prior experiences.
Correct.
So I was like, well, I understand what you're doing and you're not a terrible person and your mother is still going to love you, but that drill's not going to work. You should probably just change it.
Yeah. Do you listen to the Conan O'Brien podcast? We're going to talk about a different podcast on this podcast.
I don't, but I'm a big Conan fan.
Yeah.
I watch the show.
He interviewed, I can't remember who it was, Tina Fey. And they were talking about Robert Smigel, who is the guy who is most known for most people for Triumph the Insult comic dog. And they would talk about this word called chipple. And chipple was what they would say in place of, Robert is such a genius. He's so amazing. He knows what he's doing, blah, blah, blah. But that can't happen.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And so this whole thing where you're talking about like, oh, you're such a master. You know what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. That drill's not going to work. So they just go, Chipple, he's out of his mind. Right? Like it's that kind of, but so there needs to be this like, yes, we realize that you're not trying to say anything bad about so-and-so. You're just saying that's not a good choice. That's not a good sounding bad. That's bad.
Right. And being a pit guy and an audio guy is very, well, pit guy, you're the last thing on everyone's mind, right? Yeah. Which means by the time a decision has been made, no one has thought about the actual repercussions. And so you're trying to solve all these problems on the fly. Mm-hmm. So you become kind of attuned to like thinking three steps ahead of like, okay, well, if we do that, it's going to do that. And then we're going to have to do that. And it's not going to work. Right. I think that gets really frustrating with people sometimes because it's like, we could do that, but... Just be aware that that's going to mean this and this and this and this.
Correct.
You know, I like to think of myself as a really good troubleshooter and problem solver. And the flip side of that is you have to be able to identify all the problems. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that gets annoying when someone points out all your flaws. And I get it.
Yeah. Nobody likes to be critiqued, but
life's too short.
And a lot of times, most of the time.
Let's get better.
Yeah. It's not personal.
Yeah. I mean, it's old school drum corps, right? Like it's not personal. You're slow. Play faster.
We want the core to do better, right? Like this, we want the band to have a better show, right? So let's just it sucks. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, I don't think you're a bad teacher.
Yeah,
just this thing is not good.
It's not working.
Let's change it.
What's your life's motto? You might have just said it. I don't know.
I don't know if I have a motto as much as I have a philosophy.
Let's go with that.
Don't do anything where you're not happy at least 50% of the time.
Oh.
Just stop doing that thing. Mm-hmm. If you're not happy more times than you're not, stop wasting your time.
That's solid.
Life's too short.
Yeah, that is. What advice would you offer to your 18-year-old self?
You're going to be fine. Just keep working. You'll find work somewhere. My path has been very, like, you know, those McDonald's spaghetti mazes on the back of like Happy Meals back in the day.
Sure. We had, when I was with Happy Meals, we didn't have bags. It was still the box. Before that, then you would, sometimes you would get like, what is that? Styrofoam. Like, yeah, we were destroying the planet.
The cancer boxes. Yes. Yes. It's great. Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, I wanted to be a professional pit tech, and then I wanted to be a ranger, and then I wanted to be a studio musician, and then I wanted to do construction. I was almost an athletic trainer. I did a very intensive 4-year internship in high school.
Wow. Does GCI know about this? Like, you could be like the guy that does it all.
You know, it's fine. Well, my mom was an athletic trainer for 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. and then the hours were crazy, so she switched to tech. She's kind of I'm similar to her, rather, in that she was an athletic trainer and the hours were bad, so she quit. Mm-hmm. And then she was working in a computer lab at a school when basically there was no like filters or whatever. They just hired someone to sit in the library and make sure you weren't going on bad websites. Well, she worked her way up to like head of technology for a school district.
Holy smokes.
With no formal training. She just put her head down, learned, kept her ears open and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I've kind of taken a similar path.
Right.
Sometimes it's scary, but anything worth doing is.
I agree. It's not for this podcast, but I think college is overrated.
Don't go unless you know. Yes. Don't go.
Spend all that money and go, I'll figure out what I'm going to do.
It's fine to go start it at 21 or 22. Go out in the real world and work and realize like, oh, this sucks. I need to get a degree in this so I can do that.
Or you even talked about with the audio world, the apprentice thing that is, I don't know why people think it's so bad to make a lot of money being an electrician or a plumber. You're never not going to need those things. And some guy came and installed a light, you know, whatever, a light fixture or whatever. And he looked like he was 21. He goes, oh, I've been doing this since I was 16.
Yeah.
You know, and then once I became 18, I could do this. And I didn't ask him how much money he was making, but he's certainly not going to have any college debt. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think, especially with the way technology is moving so fast, it's like by the time you can get a curriculum up and running, it's going to be obsolete.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what's next for the cause? Do people call you the cause? Why don't they?
In high school, everyone called me Cause.
Cause. I'm going to call you the Cause.
The Cause.
Like the boss.
The only one.
I don't know any others. I don't know your wife, so.
Some of my like cousins, they have similar nicknames.
Okay, well, the Cause. What's next for the Cause?
Oh, man. Well, we're almost done with band. Well, it's like 3 weeks.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. This season went by really fast, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well.
For some.
Yeah. So November and December is pretty
slow.
Now, are you done flowing for the year?
No, I mean, I go all the way to Grand Nats.
Oh, okay. So you'll be doing
I'm in Atlanta this weekend, San Antonio, St. George.
What's in Atlanta?
They don't have Powder Springs.
Oh, that's right. It's not a super regional anymore.
Yeah. Cause Mercedes-Benz is twice as much as the Georgia Dome.
And it leaks anyway. So what does it matter?
Terrible.
So when there are audio problems, you're the guy that all the people are mad at on Twitter and Drum Corps Planet and BOA Planet?
Sometimes. There's a lot of us that mix. Usually most of the audio problems are related to internet speed and whether that's from your provider or from the server to you. What happens is they try to make it so it never buffers, even though it does. But to do that, just like on YouTube, when it all of a sudden gets really grainy, just so it keeps playing, does the same thing with audio. So a lot of times that's the biggest issue. But if you got your hate, let it out.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
He apparently does. Yeah. He does. Yeah.
Let's go.
Is there anything you want to plug?
I've started actually to do a lot more clinics and professional developments for like band directors and ISDs and stuff. So if you're interested in that, let me know. I also do, I've been doing NTCA at their circuit kind of meeting in December doing clinics there, and some other circuits have reached out. It's really good to just kind of get everyone a base layer of knowledge, and just to have someone in person where I have a short kind of outline that I go through. Here are all the things you should know. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions?
Right.
Everyone's hand
of course
goes up.
Sure.
You know, it's a really valuable experience for them before the season gets started. Like, hey, I want to do this, or hey, we did this at finals and it caught on fire. How do we make it not do that?
How do we not catch on fire on Tennessee Field, right?
Oh, yeah. I had a sub catch on fire in 2000.
What? What was this with a band? A drum corps?
I will not say which group it was in.
Okay.
I will just say that it had rained earlier.
Very good.
And I had lobbied that we should not do ensemble, at least not take the electronics out, because there's a very big show coming up. And I was overruled, and no one told me that while all the speakers were tarped, maybe they didn't get tarped right away.
Oh no.
So we plugged it in and just like, it was like we elected a new pope. It was white smoke.
And this was in what year? You're not going to,
I'm not going to say that.
Oh, okay. If it's what I think is, they have the money, they can buy a new sub or what? I don't know.
We made it work.
We made it work. Sure. How do people reach you? You don't have a website.
No.
You just Facebook you or what?
Facebook or email.
What's your email address?
ecosman87@gmail.com.
ecosman, K-O-S-M-A-N, 87
yep.
at gmail.com?
Yep.
Not Hotmail or AOL or Rocketmail or
no.
anything like that.
I do have a Yahoo account. This is my first email. Crazy Cos.
I was going to say that usually those emails, yeah. the names are like really yes. immature. Or
I still get it forwarded to my Gmail.
Is crazy spelled with a K?
Oh, you know it, baby.
Crazy Cos. Know. That's right. Eric, it has been a pleasure to have
Thanks
you
for
here
having
today.
Me.
You
it's
are
fun.
An absolute delight.
Aww,
yes. I hope sweet. That you prove victorious when the inevitable war between pageantry audio engineers takes place. This episode of Sketchbook Podcast is hosted by, edited by, and produced by me, Daniel Montoya Jr. in Austin, Texas. Our logo is created by John Suh of Purpose Designs, and our music is provided by Epidemic Sound. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SketchbookPod, and to send us questions, comments, suggestions, or concerns, email us at sketchbookpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And as always, now what if the Bears were to enter the Indianapolis 500? What would you predict would be the outcome, huh?